Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Codameron. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kata Mode, and I'm here with Codameron.
How's it going?
And today we're going to be talking about removal in Keyforge.
So we wanted to talk about the ideas of when you use removal in Keyforge. What does it look like? How do you value different cards? How do you analyze decks to how good at removal they are? And when do you decide how threatening something is and it needs to be removed? There's a lot of nuance in the removal in Keyforge. There's damage effects, there's destroy effects, there's bounce effects, archive effects, and then you could just stun something. And All of those have a very different opportunity cost for when you're trying to deal with a threat, and which threats, when you want to deal with those threats, and we think it's worth talking about.
Yeah, and another reason why we want to do this episode now is we have talked about removal when we talked about, like, you know, when you look at an Archon card. We've also talked about it in episodes where we talked about the Delta. So it's not like a topic we've never talked about before, but it has renewed relevance with the introduction of the Warding keyboard that's coming. So we're not going to lead off with Warding, but we'll bring it up later after we do this episode.
Yeah, we think that Warding is going to change the math on a lot of this removal and really change the way that you look at stuns and look at bounce effects and all the different types of removal in your deck. Look at board wipes. And, you know, we're going to do a lot of speculation here. But after we kind of talk about, you know, when do you want to remove something? When is it important to use a removal card?
Yeah, so there's basically three types of threats that people can have. So threat type number one is a passive ability, right? Think like your Hunting Witch, Succubus, maybe a Taunt, something like that. Threat type number two is an activated ability. So an activated ability is like Reap, do a thing, Fight, do a thing, or simply just being a massive body, right? Because Troll's text is, I kill anything and I don't die in return. Right, so just being a big body is relevant text. And then the third type is just Delta. Right, sometimes you see your opponent has five guys to a house, you need to kill two of them to bring that a little bit down so they can't just start mass reaping on you. So those would be the three types of threats you could run into. And that's kind of the order in which you would want to deal with them as well. And so we'll just run through what to do in the middle of a game if you see one of these threats and how you should use your removal.
Okay, so passive effects. I like starting on the Succubus, right? Mm-hmm. That's the passive effect where if it lives for a couple turns, you're going to lose a lot of value over time. But it's not something that you have to kill on sight, which is a different category we can talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. If you have a Succubus, how are you going to kill it? You're going to Gongoozle it for three or punch it for three. Tremoring it does nothing, right? Mm-hmm. But what if you just kind of didn't kill it? How threatening really is it? Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that there's different categories, right? So the Succubus, what's scary about it isn't really what it does on one turn, right? It's a card, right? You can survive going one turn where you have five card hand. What's scary about it is if you have an opportunity to kill it right now, you choose not to kill it, and then kind of find out, like, on a following turn, they do a move that makes it so you can't kill it. Maybe they put a protection next to it, like they put a Shadow Self or a Taunt next to it. Or maybe they just say, I gain a bunch of Amber, so now you have to call a different house to get me off of check instead of killing the Succubus.
Yeah, that's a really good point in that the best way to protect something isn't to play defense. It's sometimes to play more offense. If you have the Succubus out and I choose not to kill it, I might not lose my guy, maybe my Raiding Knight or something that I was going to use to kill it, or the Punch. Mm-hmm. But now you're playing a Snudge, and the Snudge is sitting next to the Succubus, and I go, well, I've got to kill that instead. That's the second turn of the Succubus, right? Or something big comes down, like a Dusk Witch. Now I've got to commit two attacks to that, and look at that, your Succubus just got a second card out of my hand, right? And kind of gauging where that power level is, not only in, like, the card pool, but also in the moment of the game, is kind of important. And a card that Cure Mode and I disagree on a little bit, but I think Cure Mode's more on the right, because he thinks about this card a lot more than I do, is Ember Imp.
Yeah, so in terms of units you have to deal with, I think there's certain units that are, like, you see them, and you might adjust your game plan to deal with them. And then there's others that are, like, you drop everything and deal with it. I view Ember Imp as the top end of adjust your game plan, but not drop everything. Like, I'm okay, like, you know, not killing it and killing something else that I might find more valuable, or bolstering my board, or maybe mass reaping, over killing the Ember Imp. Whereas with the Restrained Guntus, I'm dropping everything to get rid of it. You know, like, that's usually where I make that cutoff. But I do view Ember Imp as, like, the top end of that, where I will take a lot of bad turns to deal with the Ember Imp, but I won't necessarily gimp my entire game plan. Because, like, I don't view Ember Imp as a card that single-handedly loses you a game. I just think it hurts. It just hurts a lot. But
it does hurt a lot. But, I mean, you can still play two cards and pitch the rest, right? And then sometimes that's enough board streaming. Maybe you still get to six. Maybe... because you're still making choices that push you forward, right? You're still, you're not getting no value. You're just getting less value. Yeah. And that can be rough, but it's okay. And
Also a two. That's relevant also. Yeah. So, like, if you were to compare Ember Imp and, say, Succubus, I actually personally view Succubus as a little bit more threatening than Ember Imp, just because I know every kill spell is getting the Ember Imp. Whereas Succubus, my all of my Shadow Skill spells... and a number, like my Twin Bolts, those don't take it out. And now you have a real problem. Yeah, and also, Succubus might trade with some of your guys, too.
Yeah, I had to, like, say, like, okay, there's the Gongoozle, there's the Punch, there's a lot more pings for one and two. But a lot of the times what you end up doing is taking, like, some 3-drop, like some Mars 3-drop, like a Thinkdrome, and ramming that into the Succubus and trading, right? You know, sometimes you'll get the 4 or the Bumpsy that gets to trade with it nicely, but... That's like where we stand on passive effects, right? The threat for them is at how much value they get over time, and watching that clock of, okay, the Hunting Witch might be 3 right now, but, you know, maybe you can take that hit, maybe not. But, you know, you have to watch how badly that passive effect can stack up.
Yeah, I mean, so this is obviously really easy to do if you're deciding, do I play the 3-card turn or the 4-card turn, and the 3-card turn is the one that gets rid of the passive effect, right? You just take the 3-card turn. This isn't hard. Where it becomes hard if you're like, okay, I have one dude on the board that can remove the threat. Thinkdrome. And I have a Thinkdrome which can trade into the Succubus. And then I have, like, one Mars card that does nothing, right? I can choose to do that. Or I can choose to play, say, 3 guys out of a different house plus an action. So I can have a 4-card turn or only a 2-card turn, but the 2-card turn is really bad and the 4-card turn is 3 permanents. That's when you're like, okay, do I need to kill this thing or not? And this is where this calculus of, like, how much worse can this get? So, like, looking at their Archon card and seeing, like, okay, do they have a way to put me in a spot where I would not be able to kill this thing next turn is an important thing to measure. And if you don't see this thing steamrolling, you can oftentimes say, I'm going to get the stronger turn and take a small hit on the passive effect. And if you do think that it could steamroll, then you might have to sacrifice.
Yeah, and what you're weighing it against is not just the... removal of that, but how strong your response is. If my response is 2 guys and 4 amber to put you in check, then that's worth the 1 card I lose and the risk that, you know, I might not be able to kill that thing. Right? If I can get if I can steal a key off of it just by, like, sneaking myself the 6, then I'll take that Succubus for 2 turns any day.
Exactly. All right. So now we could jump into the next type. So the next type of threat is just activated abilities. Right, so this would be like your Sutterkins, your Trolls, Bolters. And this is where I think that the removal becomes interesting, because, like, in the passive effects, you have to always kill these guys. You don't really want to bounce them because they can replay them. Stunning oftentimes does nothing. But in the case of activated abilities, every single type of disruption is relevant. Like, stunning becomes really relevant. Like, a Tremor on 3 guys that need to be activated to get value is really good. And then similarly, if you play a Nature's Call on a Bolter, that feels really bad as a Mars player, you know. So being able to look at these other types of removal, or just, like, control effects, becomes way more important in the case of activated effects.
Yeah, you can. I like that you can kind of look at those as control effects. I don't even mind sometimes doing a bunch of damage to a Valder or to a Crump or something. Now, if that Crump has 4 damage on it, he doesn't really do anything because he's not going to kill me and live. I'm not going to lose that amber. You can, if they've got these activated effects, you can, for the most part, control them. Stun is the perfect example. You don't want to stun a Hunting Witch. It doesn't do anything. You want to stun the Naughty, the Thief, the Fagin, the
yep.
the guys who are getting all that value out of reaping. Oranto the Chained, stun him. Then he doesn't do anything. He's just sitting there with more damage on him.
Yeah. You can buy time. Like, also, like, there's cards like Nocturnal Maneuver. Is usually not that great of a card, but Nocturnal Maneuver becomes quite relevant when you're like, okay, I kind of just need to buy one turn because I have five Untamed cards in my hand, and I don't have the ability to kill whatever's like the big guy I'm scared of. Like, I don't have the ability to kill your Sutterkin right now via Untamed, but I need to dump these Untamed cards. But I can tap them. So I could just tap down your guy for one turn, lay out all my Untamed cards, and then next turn I'll deal with it.
So a lot of this seems kind of obvious, right? If you've got the Tremor, you don't want to hit the Hunting Witch, you want to hit the Naughty the Thief. We know that, right? Mm-hmm. But how can we take this to the next level? And I think that's in the Archon analysis, or at least the kind of guessing what your opponent's going to do next, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm playing a deck and I've got a bunch of Tremors, maybe I look at your deck and I look for all the active effects. And conversely, if I have a bunch of activated effects, maybe I'm looking for your removal a little bit harder. I don't have to just look for the Poison Wave. I can look for the Tremors, and I know that's going to hit me pretty hard. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, normally when you look at an Archon card, the most important thing to look for is board wipes, right? Because it's the most obvious thing, where it's like you don't want to get blown out by getting all your guys wiped off the board. However, you still want to know what the types of removal your opponent has. So an easy example would be, let's say you're playing a Time Traveler deck. You don't really care if they kill your Time Traveler. You do care if they purge your Time Traveler.
Do not get Ubilated. Right?
So not get that's something you need to watch out for. So like, knowing whether or not they can actually purge your guy, really big deal. You also want to make sure that in the case of, like, let's say you're playing a bunch of really big dudes, you want to make sure, like, okay, if they have cards that punish that, like, let's say they have a Spirit's Way, which is a big board wipe, maybe mm-hmm. you don't fully commit. Like, Spirit's Way sometimes is a monster board wipe, other times it's kind of whatever. But in the case of you having a bunch of big guys, maybe at that point you prioritize reaping because you know that there are removals coming. Similarly, if you look at, if your deck has a whole bunch of really strong passive effect guys, so you have a lot of Ember Imps, a lot of Succubuses, a lot of Hunting Witches, a lot of Mothers, those types of cards, that's where you might want to look at their deck a little more closely to see how many cards that do 2 or 3 damage they have. Like, do they have just a bunch of random ping damage to get rid of these guys? Or do they only have, like, 3? Like, if their deck has, like, say, 2 Relentless Whispers and, like, 1 Gungoozle, and there's really not any other way to get rid of these guys, they're going to hit 1 or 2 of your guys, and then the rest of them are just running around. So at that point, their only form of removal becomes creatures. So then, you know, if you just keep their creatures in check, or maybe you can have taunt for their creatures, now all of a sudden your passive effect guys become way more valuable.
And that kind of takes us to the third spot we're looking at, which is that delta. When you're mm-hmm. using your removal to kind of control a board, and maybe you're using that as protection for your board. Maybe if mm-hmm. their delta is only 2, then they won't use that house again, and your succubus might live another turn, right? If they're building up a big board, or you know that they could build a board because you saw that they have 8 Sanctum guys in their deck, then you hit those guys, right? Mm-hmm. The big Sanctum board is almost like a big board of active abilities, because Reaping is action game 1 Amber. Seems pretty mm-hmm. good. So that's kind of where you're kind of asking yourself when to hit the board wipe button, right? If you mm-hmm. have the Unlocked Gateway, if you have, or even just like some sort of double, like a Nature's Call with a recursion for another Nature's Call, that's kind of like a yeah. board wipe, right? When do you hold that for maximum value? Do you take your 2-card turn now instead of your nice 3-card Untamed turn with the Save the Pack, They're Everywhere combo or something mm-hmm. to try to hit more guys? Right? And
yeah.
I like to go back to cards plus board for that. Watching when I'm getting to 6, go back to the pyramid. If mm-hmm. if the pyramid is better for me by waiting that turn, I'll play the 2-card turn if it also gets me to check. I'll play the 2-card turn if it gets them off check, right? And then I know that yeah. somehow I can wipe their board, take their amber, or get better value out of it by just sequencing my turns a little bit more efficiently as far as the pyramid goes.
Yeah, so in general, when it comes to holding cards, I don't like holding cards pretty much ever, and that goes for board wipe or for removal cards as well. The only time that I'm okay like holding a removal card, and holding, there's 2 types of holding, right? One, when we talked about our implied value episode, you know, you can choose to take a bad turn to get a better turn later, and then the other one is you can just directly hold the card. And the only time that I would ever advocate holding a removal card is if you think that that removal card will be the difference between winning and losing. So a board wipe's a really obvious one where holding a board wipe can very well win you the game. Like if I sit on a, if I choose not to play the board wipe and your next turn is you play four creatures and now my board wipe hits you for eight creatures to my three, that's incredible. But, you know, otherwise though, it can be a little dicey. Like holding, say, a Harder They Come, which just says kill one guy that's five or more, that's unlikely to swing the game, you know?
Yeah, well, I was also saying, like, implicitly that you better be weighing that hold against some other benefit you're getting. You can't just play the two-card turn to hope for, like, the bigger hit. I'm okay with a medium-sized hit if I don't have a better plan B, right? And because I still have to get that all that stuff off the board. But one thing that I do like as far as holding cards is sometimes a weird game of chicken happens, right? This happens normally like mid-late to late game when a lot of the time this will happen with a recurred too much to protect where you'll be, or you know that they have the burn the stockpile. They played it once, they've shuffled back, and they've archived a card. You know they've got the burn the stockpile, so you only put yourself to six. That can happen in removal too. I've had games where my opponent uses World Tree to put like the Duskwitch back on the top of the deck. And they're not going to play Untamed until they see me play a bunch of pink cards. And I'm holding a Nerve Blast. They kind of know I'm holding a Nerve Blast because I've been holding off on the Shadows turn. So we're playing this game of chicken of playing less optimal turns and saying, who's gonna drop their removal card first? And I think that that posturing and even that threat of maybe you're bluffing the removal card. Maybe one of you knows it, but the other one just kind of expects it. Bluffing the burn the stockpile does that just as well. I think that's an important time to hold cards in high-level games towards the end game.
Yeah, this especially happens with board wipes, too. So if you're the player that is winning on the board and your opponent has a board wipe, your opponent's typically going to wait until you play a bunch of creatures to play that board wipe. So what players will find themselves in a situation where they're like, okay, I got five cards in my hand of a house. Like, I have five Mars cards in hand, four of which are creatures. And then, but I also have just four Brobnar guys on the board. And the question is, okay, do I just ram Brobnar until they board wipe me? Or do I draw a bunch of cards and play a bunch of cards? And this comes down to like whether or not you think they have the board wipe. And that can be kind of hard to figure out in the moment. You have to try to get a read on them, like how many cards have they played? Had they been playing in a weird way where they've been drawing less cards and they're holding something? And that's where you can try to figure that out.
Yeah, there's a lot of times when if the player with four is reaping for four and then the other player only plays like one or two cards and doesn't really impede you, you go, okay, then they've got it. They're waiting for me to play the Mars turn or something if they're not answering my threats.
And that's where you just start playing the Brobnar, right? You just you just say, I'm going to get four every turn until you kill my guys. Because also, like, they could just play a bunch of cards and then eventually, like, take out a couple of those dudes, and now you play Mars. But if they've already done the work to kill those Brobnar guys, and then you play all the Mars guys, and then they board wipe you, then that board wipe lost a lot of value than it would have if you would have just played the Mars guys ahead of time.
And of course, you have to weigh all that against, if I've got four Mars creatures in my hand, that fifth card that's green better be a Shatterstorm, because if they go to six, I want to have an answer in Mars, because I want to play Mars the turn I need to shift my strategy.
Right. Yeah, and that's usually why you would want to play the Mars turn, right? A lot of times the reason you're holding off on that Mars turn is you're like, maybe it doesn't have key control. And then you're like, okay, this, like, playing the Mars turn is a better long-term play in that it builds up my board really big and I get to draw more cards, those cards specifically being Amber control, but the risk you take by playing that turn is they can just board wipe you. So knowing whether or not they have that is important.
So let's take all this knowledge that we just kind of laid out and ask ourselves, how does warding change the math, right? So I'm sitting on this board and it's unwarded, right? Let me just real quick say, warding is a token that lives on your guys until they get damaged or destroyed. Then the token goes away. So a lot of the times we're going to see cards like Whistling Darts wiping all the wards off the table and then the board wipe coming down, right? So let's go back to this Brobnar board that we've got, and we're reaping with it, and it's unwarded, right? So you're actually asking yourself, oh, if I play all the Mars guys, I'm going to get board wiped. If you have two or three wards on there from some effect that comes out of Worlds Collide, then you play the Mars hand. If you get board wiped, you're still alive, right?
Yep.
Your opponent has to work twice as hard, like 1.5 times as hard, or at least more efficiently, to actually wipe your board out, right? I think that warding is going to really change these stalemates and really change the flow of the game if warding is prevalent enough in the metagame.
Yeah, well, in this example we had with the Mars and Brovnar, right? The reason that you would hammer home Brovnar is that if people already, like if your opponent's already making an effort to thin down your Brovnar side and then board wipes your Mars, it's fine because, like, yeah, the board wipe's strong, but it wasn't like a one card solution to everything. Like, they had to take multiple turns and multiple actions to get rid of everything. Similarly, if you have to play a bunch of cards to get rid of my ward counters and then play a board wipe, it's not the same. It's the reason that, like, Save the Pack is not as good as
Coward's End.
What's it called? Yes, yeah, it's Coward's End, because, like, in order for Save the Pack to work, you need to also have Cooperative Hunting. And that's just harder to put together.
Well, once They're Everywhere came out, like, I didn't even put that together until they showed up in a sealed deck for me. And then I put those two on the table, and I go, oh, now these cards have synergy in one house, right?
Yeah.
And when we look for board wipes in the next set, there's a good chance that if warding is prevalent enough across cards, that we're also going to say, okay, where's our de-warding cards, right?
Yep.
And I think that's a really cool use for these whistling darts, these throwing stars cards that feel like they don't do a lot. They're going to get a lot more powerful in the future. Maybe Bad Penny becomes a lot better when she can ping a ward off, right?
Yeah, I think there's also a question of how prevalent is warding going to be, right? Because there's a really big difference between a guy saying reap, ward something, and action, ward your whole board, right? Like if there's like multiple cards that just let you spam ward counters, at that point I think board wipes become really low on the totem pole. Like they lose major value, whereas damage that is a little bit more dinky, like little damage here, little damage there, that becomes more valuable. Because I don't want to be having my gateway to dis against a side that has six wards. That's terrible. But I wouldn't mind still having Gungoozle. Like, if I Gungoozle a guy, get rid of a ward, you still discard a card, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Like, that doesn't lose a whole lot of value.
That sounds great against a ward, actually. Gungoozle sounds fantastic. And notably, the creature fighting becomes very strange, because if you attack into a warded guy, you still take the damage from their power, right? And that's something that I've got to speculate on, and I'm very excited to work more with, but that's kind of why we were talking about the removal tools episode now, in anticipation of that. And then I think the last thing I wanted to touch on was the other types of removal.
So the soft removal is good. Stun, still really good.
Stun sounds
great.
So
all of like the not top end removal becomes stronger, and then also like any sort of repetitive removal becomes better. So like a guy that we mentioned earlier, like a Zelo Bolter, you know, going up against set three decks maybe a little bit better because he does ping damage. He can just remove all the ward tokens.
There's the Flamethrower in Brovnar, which does one with one splash.
Or Fire Spitter.
Fantastic.
Right, like so cards like that, like cards that just say, I have a permanent on the board that has an ability to dink off damage in random spots, those get a big bump. And then all the softer removal, those get a bump. But then meanwhile, the universal board wipes, those go down, which is good, by the way. I don't like how many universal board wipes we have right now.
And how good they are.
Yeah, so being able to curb that will actually be really useful. Like, imagine Champion's Challenge when you have, you know, five guys that live as a result. You know. Anyway, so yeah, that's really all we have to say about removal for this episode. It's been Bouncing Death Quark. If you like the show, you can support us a couple ways. Number one, you can go to our social media. Our social media, we have both Facebook and Twitter. It is at Death Quark for either one of them. Through our social medias, you can find an invite to our Discord channel, and that is the easiest way to contact either myself or Codameron directly. If you want to get more content, Codameron does YouTube streaming along with recording a video from various vault tours, so you can look at that as well. And lastly, if you want to support us even more, you can get merch. So you can represent us at different vault tours or your local events. You can buy hats, you can buy shirts, you can buy play mats, like all sorts of cool stuff on our store. You can find that via the swag section of our Discord. So yeah, tell your friends about the show, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a bunch.